Subway everyday value means many mouth-watering piled high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara. And made-to-your-order BLT, the $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Okay, it's a drain. Bill Simmons is the host of your Friday BS Report. We have our friend Dave Jacoby on the line. We're going to break down the duel, which is normally would have been the greatest running thing of this spring, but then Celtics Bulls trumped it. Jacoby, have you been watching?
Well, both. And much like the Celtics Bulls series, the duel's been heating up of late as well.
Yeah, it has. Before we get into this, I do want to mention a couple things. First of all, Wilds, our friend Kevin Wilds finally talked me into the benefits of Twitter. And I did start a Twitter account. It's SportsGuy33. So it's twitter.com/SportsGuy33. And I'm not going to update it with stuff like, you know, Bill Simmons just had two slices of pizza. It's not going to be that. It's going to be stuff that is revolves around my column. I think that's the right way to play it, right?
I mean, my philosophy is a lot of people use Twitter as a vehicle to tell the world how awesome their life is. Like,
yeah.
I'm sitting front row at the Laker game next to Leo. Like, I don't care about your awesome life.
Yeah.
I'm living my own terrible life over here. I don't need your awesome life getting in the way and making me feel worse about myself.
Right.
And I don't update people on what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I don't care that you just went to the gym.
Yeah.
You know? I don't care that you're about to go get Italian food.
Because I can relate in no way at all with that. If you say, don't you hate the guy at the gym that sweats on the thing and doesn't clean it up? Granted, not that interesting, but at least I can somewhat relate and it makes some sense in my life.
Well, I've made like 6 or 7 posts so far. Most of them just links to podcasts or columns. I did post something last night about how I want to hire Shane Stanton and Jeff Galluli to cripple Tony Allen before Game 7. And I don't know if they had a website, so I was throwing that out. Now, to me, that's a good Twitter post. I want to know if those guys have a website and if they accept PayPal and what their price is to cripple Tony Allen before Game 7. A valid question.
It's also a good way. I use it in some ways as someone who likes to think of funny sentences and jokes and little one-liners.
Yeah.
Is if you tweet them, you have them forever.
Yeah, you remember them. Good point.
Yeah, you have them, and you have your own little archive there, so you can go back and be like, wow, I was really funny 9 days ago that I completely forgot about.
The other thing I did was on Facebook, I created a website for my upcoming book, The Book of Basketball, which is released on October 27th. Now, if you belong to Facebook, unfortunately, Facebook works where you have to be signed in, so you can't give the link. But if you're on Facebook, just search for The Book of Basketball. That group will come up. And then you can join, and I will update what's going on with the book
in the book
for the next 6-7 months. Yeah.
In the Book of Basketball, do you acknowledge the alternate titles for the Book of Basketball?
Yes, there's an entire footnote. I don't think people – I'm going to have to actually write a whole thing about this at one point. I don't think people realize that it was like a 4-week process that involved screen – basically, I was really attached. I CC'd all my friends – or most of them, or some of them. I don't remember how many. But basically said, what would you like this book to be called? And people just gave all these wild ideas, and some of them were just fantastic. But the best one, I think we can all agree the best one was Tuesdays with Horry.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the winner. Everybody was like, done. Bing, bing, bing. You've got it. Tuesdays with Horry. That's what it should be called.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the publishing company made some really awesome points for why it should not be called Tuesdays with Horry, and what a terrible idea that was.
Were they open to that even as a potential?
Now, see, here's the thing.
Do you get final say on what your book is called at the end of the day? I don't know how this whole thing works.
I do, but okay. What they did was they convinced me why it would be a terrible idea to be called that, and here's why. Because anyone who's really going to appreciate that title probably would have bought the book anyway. It's people like you. You're going to read the book anyway. You don't care if it has a cool title or not. Whatever, you're going to read it. They want the title to have...
For like foreigners that come from Belize and don't know what basketball is, they go to Barnes & Noble and they're like, oh, I'll just grab this.
Oh, it's a book about basketball. Like, they really, like, you almost have to dumb it down that much. And then on top of it, what I never really factored in, and which was really patiently explained to me, was the Google and the effects of Google that can have on a book.
Ooh.
And if somebody searches basketball book, what's going to come up first? The book of basketball.
Yeah, if they search Tuesday Robert Horry.
Right. So the goal is, if you're going to sell as many books as you can, the goal isn't to try to market your book to Dave Jacoby, because you're going to buy it anyway. I want Dave Jacoby's aunt to buy the book. I want Dave Jacoby's very intelligent girlfriend who went to college with Anne Hathaway to buy the book.
Yeah, she'll probably steal my copy. But
yeah, she probably will. Whatever.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Can I plug your book quickly?
Sure. You haven't read it.
A couple days ago. I know. Yeah. Don't worry. I'm getting there. A couple days ago, we had a speaker series here on Bristol campus. Mr. Malcolm Gladwell came by to share some of his thoughts, which were very interesting and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was reading your book, and he said it was phenomenal.
Oh, good.
A glowing, glowing recommendation. He was, I don't know, this is like slightly a great compliment and also slightly a little bit of an insult. He seemed shocked at how good it was. it's like a huge compliment and also sort of an insult. He's like, it's amazing. And he was like genuinely surprised. It was like, wow, your expectations must have been pretty low, huh?
Well, I think he was nervous because he's writing the foreword, and it would have been awkward if he didn't like the book that much. So maybe he was... But I mean, the thing is, I spent 2 years on it, and, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a really long book. Like, it could have been two books, and it was a big battle for me whether to kind of almost split it up into two books. Then I'm thinking, why do I want to make people pay for two books? Like, I'll just put everything in one book, and you know what? There it is. It's going to be like 650 pages or whatever. Whatever. It's got footnotes. It's got everything. You'll get two weeks out of it.
In Simmons' form, it's not a true narrative from start to finish. You can pick up and put it down.
I feel like even though it's long, I don't think it reads that way, and I don't think anybody will finish it and say, man, I wish that had been 300 pages shorter. I think with movies... If I made you sit in the theater for a three-hour movie, no matter how good it is, you're still going to be secretly mad that I made you sit in the theater for a three-hour movie.
Absolutely.
With a book, you can just stop. I'm tired. I'll read the rest later.
Yeah,
so, whatever. Anyway, enough about me. So I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter, and you can hit both of those things. And I'm kind of secretly embarrassed about both. I'm not going to lie.
I know the feeling.
And speaking of being secretly embarrassed, let's talk about the duel.
Yeah,
the greatest non-Celtics Bulls series, whatever, that's going on TV.
It's getting really good.
Yeah, it's getting good.
I mean, we've been off for a few weeks. I mean, there was a bit of a drop-off from episode one, which is natural.
Yep.
You know, it's like Ray Allen's not going to score 51 points in game seven, most likely.
Right.
But it's picked it back up in episode four.
Well, you know what hasn't really dropped in quality at all is the opening.
The open. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because something happened after our last podcast.
Yeah.
Is you didn't know about the haka when you saw it.
Right.
So I knew about that, and I watched it this week through the filter of someone who has never seen the haka before.
Uh-huh. Right.
And when you watch it with those eyes, it is the most insane, confusing, baffling piece of television in the history of television.
I've watched it. Probably on the actual TV show, I've watched it maybe 13 times, but I've also watched the extended version online 5 or 6, so I'm up to about 20. And I have so many favorite parts. First of all, CT and Adam are both in it. They get kicked out of, they probably filmed this and then that night got kicked out. They couldn't get everyone back with the new guys to recreate this. Like, it was like they had captured the most magnificent cinematic moment in history, and screw it. We got to go with who we have.
Behind the scenes of that shoot would have been a great feature film.
It could have been 2 hours. I would have watched it.
Easily. 30 for 30. Get behind the scenes of the Haka shoot.
The other thing I like is that it starts off slow, and you don't know. And then, you know, and then it starts getting into the intensity of the chanting. And it kind of peaks when it cuts to little Adam.
And he goes, la!
Yeah, it's my favorite part. He really gets into it.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's in like a defensive stance, like a good like Rajon Rondo defensive stance. He sticks his tongue out and goes,
It's so good.
If you don't know what the haka is and you're watching that, you must just think it's insane.
And I gotta say, you know, say what you want about Evan, and his voice reminds me so much of Matthew Berry that I just can't differentiate them at this point. He's like Matthew Berry on steroids with more hair. But I cannot believe what a phenomenal performance he puts on in that song. Like, what more could you ask from your lead of the haka chant than what Evan gives you in that?
Hey, Evan commits and he goes hard. And there's going to be a lot of Evan talk here.
Yeah.
Just one more thing about the Open is that it leads me to turn, it got me thinking about like the past Opens in the Real World Challenge history, mm-hmm. and it's topped the previously most ridiculously construed and shot and created Open was when TJ Lavin was playing a video game. Do you remember this?
Oh, vaguely.
He was playing a video game. He had a video game controller in his hands, and all of the cast members were acting as characters in his little video game in spandex jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to find it on YouTube or something and send it to you. It was only topped in its sheer confusing stupidity by the haka dance.
Well, I have a number of things I think we should cover, but here's the first one.
Okay.
So the goal of the game is, you don't want to be picked last because that means you're in the duel. And when you get when you end up last, you have to pick someone else to be in the duel. You can only pick the people that are standing in front of you. We have a 100% success rate of whoever gets picked is furious about it, like it's the biggest betrayal that's ever happened, and they just can't believe it. How could you do this? That was gutless. It's like they have to pick somebody. They have to pick one person. Why are you mad at them?
And it's usually Evan who gets selected in the last couple episodes. And it's literally like being in a bar and the bartender just says, look, this whole place is going to explode unless you pick someone to have a fist fight with. And everyone right. just says, oh, yeah, see that guy in the corner with the tattoo on his face, Mike Tyson? I'm going for him.
Right.
It's a guaranteed loss.
Yeah. Well, I thought Evan summed it up. Well, actually, Evan had his best moment had nothing to do with him getting picked. It was when he was talking about how his relationship with Paula had fallen apart, and he said something like, she's been to my house. She's met my parents. She's shown my younger brother her breasts. His actual quote. And it just kind of just. Yeah, it just kind of. They moved on from that. Like, wait a second. How old is your brother? Is he like 13? Like, is this illegal?
How'd that come up in conversation?
Was it like. After a big drinking night, she flashed him. Like, it was, this is why we need a real world road rules challenge duel, whatever it's called, block. I want all these questions answered. I want to know why Paula showed Evan her breasts, or Evan's brother
Evan's
her breasts.
Brother.
Yes. Younger brother.
And I didn't know that was one of the big tent poles that meant friendship. Like, you've been to my house, you've met my parents, and you show my little brother your breath.
We've shared cocaine. We've shot heroin.
Yeah.
We've tried to market a sex tape and failed.
Yeah. We knocked over a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Remember that time you showed my little brother your breath?
It's so funny that how these people become friends. Like, it just like that they would just be friends outside of this just bizarre human laboratory experiment or of whatever this is called. Like,
oh,
these people go see movies together. Like, Evan would call Dunbar and be like, hey, man, you want to go see X-Men?
On the hosting circuit. They meet each other. And I was watching another genius reality television show called Bad Girls Club.
Yeah.
And they go to the fine establishment on Sunset Boulevard called the Saddle Ranch, which you may or may not know.
I know it very well.
Okay.
And my goal in life is to keep my daughter from ever drinking there.
She can drink there as long as she doesn't ride the mechanical bull. She's fine.
Well, that's what I don't want, yeah.
And the cast of the Bad Girls Club decides to have a mid-afternoon beer at the Saddle Ranch. And guess who's there? A table of 8 real-world Road Rules Challenge cast members just hanging out.
Wow. During the middle of the day?
Yeah, just during the middle of the day. Happened to be at the Saddle Ranch, just sitting around a table, just chopping it up, talking about the good old days of the Inferno 1 and the fresh meat.
Well, but I mean, in the middle of the afternoon, it's a bad time to start plowing through cocaine. You want to give that some time. You want to maybe start out with some beers and maybe some mechanical bull riding and then go to the cocaine.
Well, you gotta get a cycle in and a little workout, and then you head out to the Saddle Ranch.
Well, let's talk about since steroids have been so predominantly involved in sports and the sports experience right now, we just cannot get away from A-Rod at this point. And I think he's creating new steroids to try. On this duel, it's really quite possible that some of these guys are a little chemically altered. And here's my evidence. Abnormally big bodies, tantrums, irrational behavior.
Check.
Back zits.
Check.
And
prominent brows.
Prominent brows. Kind of the skull deep, that's a little too big for deeper, whatever.
Deep voices.
Deep voices. And
the desire to be a WWF wrestler.
That's a problem.
That's another indicator.
A body expanding about 45 pounds since we met you on the Real World or the Road Rules
episode. Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. So my question is, you know, I don't want to call out Evan, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he had injected himself with something. I probably don't want to take the guy who might be on steroids and as my guy to go against in the duel. That's not what I'm looking for.
It just doesn't make sense. It's like you can pick any team to play in the Western Conference for the playoffs, and everyone's like, Lakers.
Yeah. Like Nehemiah picked Evan.
You can choose any team you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I would pick the big fat guy. Because there's a 4 out of 5 chance that you're not going to have to do the thing where you try to knock the other guy off the ramp or whatever. What's that called? Beatdown?
No, that's called a push-off, I believe.
Push-off, yeah.
Push-back.
Obviously,
like
he's going to win that because he's 350 pounds. But you'll win any other events. You're basically saying I have an 80% chance of winning against this guy. He's who I would pick first. But
I wish I could coach these people before they go into their eliminations, too.
Yeah.
Because it's like that push-back is not about pushing the person backwards off of the thing. It's pushing them sideways, a little deception, a little weight shift here and there.
Right.
I felt like I could have saved Ryan's life. We could still have Ryan, and we would have lost MJ.
Are we happy with the actual duels?
Absolutely
I don't think I love any of the events, and I'm not even sure I like any of them.
I didn't like any of the events, and I was going to go hard at the producers because I'm very upset with all of them until they broke out that bobblehead challenge from the last one.
So good. Why don't you explain that to the listeners?
Well, as a reality TV show star, you're often put in strange and embarrassing situations as part of these challenges. For example, they had to wear bikinis and Speedos and slide each other around on a hockey rink. And as they come to this challenge, they hand everyone a self-portrait of themselves that is essentially like the tent that you put on top of a gazebo, like an outdoor table tent size that you have to put on your head, and it's your own face blown up and stretched to turn you into a human bobblehead.
Yep.
At which point you have to run to the top of a mountain and then get on some sort of tricycle contraption and ride down to the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah, there was like a definite Mike Utley situation brewing with these people on these luges with giant bobbleheads. I was like terrified of some sort of horrible something. But
it's terrified or rooting for it. Let's just be honest to the BS Report listeners.
Depends on who they were showing.
It's like only that challenge can make these people that do this, mind you, for a living, say things like, I am so embarrassed right now.
Yeah, it's true.
And I feel silly. Like, if you can make Evan say, I feel silly.
Yeah.
After all the things that we've seen these people be through, then you know you've really accomplished something. I'm going to tip my hat to the Real World producers there.
Yeah, I mean, they basically do everything short of just stripping everyone completely naked and turning a fire hose on them.
Yeah, which I'm sure they'll do at some point.
Like you heard, like, what do they do in prison movies when the people come in and they strip you naked and they cavity search and then they throw that white powder at you?
Yeah.
What's that powder called? Jacqueline, what's that powder called?
I haven't been to prison for like 10 years.
I have no idea.
Well, whatever it's called. And that's, you know, it's like, man, that can't be any worse than that powder. Like, that's probably going to be an event in this show at some point.
Yeah.
The prison cavity search powder throw combination, and then you have to, like, climb the ladder.
Done on, like, the 50-yard line of the AFC championship game or something. Yeah, I mean, that's how they're going to do it. One thing I wanted to comment about these challenges is in fact, I remember Brad in Brazil, he came away with a motorcycle. And remember, they used to get, like, trips to Italy if you won these things. Now you get a Slacker G2 personal radio player. You get like a Walkman for radio.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
You and think you get like headphones.
Well, I mean, how many people watch this show? I'm going to say like 3-4 million.
It cumulatively, yes, because they re-air it so much, but I imagine they're probably like 800,000 on the original airing.
Right. So you think like for product, if you're going to have product placement, it wouldn't be, you know, maybe the flip video would be about as low as you'd go.
Yeah.
But really, it's going to be like, yeah, here's a 50-inch Sony plasma TV. Like, those are the kind of prizes I would be expecting.
But that's what they have been for the last eight challenges. And now they literally get Dr. Dre headphones. Like, you're giving me headphones separately from the Walkman?
Like, I think it's
like, what do you mean?
Well, it's bad when you're getting a gift and your reaction is, Dr. Dre has headphones? Not that you're excited about the headphones?
Did he sign them? And then another one is they get free Wi-Fi for their car.
Yeah.
That's just useless.
Yeah, it's a technology that's about 3 years away from being relevant.
I think it's an economic indicator, and I think Warren Buffett is paying attention and making serious financial decisions based on this.
I like the way it's going because by the time the next duel happens, I think my book could be one of the prizes. I see TJ Lavin holding him up saying, winner gets the Book of Basketball by Bill Simmons, autographed.
You get
690 pages.
You get the first three chapters. And if you win another one, you get 4 through 6.
It's an original edition Book of Basketball.
You get every other page. You have to win another challenge. It's like giving the Walkman and the headphones separately.
Yeah. Are these people on Twitter? How can I have them more involved? How can I have them more involved in my life?
Well, I remember Kevin Wilds, a friend of ours, sent me CT's MySpace blog, which was a great read.
Wow, was that coherent?
Yeah, man. It was basically young woman after young woman throwing themselves at CT.
Ah, so good.
And so if that's just, I mean, I don't even have to explain the different implications and how ironic that is.
Well, I would think it's the same mentality like when women fall in love with serial killers.
Yeah.
You know when like a serial killer is already in prison and women write them letters and then they marry him and they do conjugal visits? I would think CT provokes that same or triggers that same sort of chemical reaction in women.
And may one day provoke it. Let's not rule it out.
Actually, it might provoke something that ends in jail. You did some legwork on the whole thing with CT's brother. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, not in detail. Not in detail.
Well, give us the cliff notes.
I mean, I'm a huge jerk in general, but it's a pretty sensitive thing. What happened was is it seems like CT's brother had some personal problems with another group of human beings, and they had a dispute which physically escalated very quickly to involve weapons. And apparently, at some point, allegedly, CT's brother had an axe, and the other gentleman had a rifle. And you can imagine where it went from there. And if you care to look it up, it's actually like a very interesting case about self-defense.
Yeah, you mailed us all the stories, me and a couple of our friends, and it was really kind of fascinating. I don't mean to make light of it, but I mean it was like it's like a CSI episode. They claim that CT's brother was attacking this guy, but really the shots were in his back. And
yeah, like no, the first shot is self-defense.
Yeah.
But then the second shot is not.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You shoot someone with a rifle, they're going to lie down on the ground. And if you shoot them again, you are no longer defending yourself.
And there were some interesting quotes from family members about how, I forget the guy's name, I think it was like Michael, but it was like nobody would take down Michael unless, you know, you were shooting at him from behind. Or the implication was that CT is actually not even the strongest member of his own family. Like this guy Michael is...
Yeah, and I believe his name. Let's not even use his name, but it's not Michael.
Whatever his name is.
Yeah, but. And one thing that I've learned is through this whole thing, it's changed the way that I feel about CT somewhat.
I agree. I feel kind of bad for him.
I feel bad for CT too. And after reading his MySpace blog and and just kind of just checking in on the guy, it's. I'm going to get somewhere else on this. I'm going to make a bold, controversial claim here, Phil. You ready?
Yeah.
I am more scared of Nehemiah than I am of CT.
Wow.
And I'll explain why. CT is angry and was troubled based on some events in his life.
Yeah.
Nehemiah is crazy. And crazy is scarier than angry.
Huh.
And you always got to worry about those motivational, over-positive guys. They've got demons.
So you're saying the guy who said after a fight, I want to rip off his head and eat it, is less scary than Nehemiah?
Yes. And okay. Less scary than the guy who puts motivational quotes on the quote board every morning.
Right.
Now, your initial reaction might be, wow, that doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, there's something going on. When you call your room the Zen room and you're putting up motivational quotes on the wall, and did you see the look on his face when he was standing there about to pick Evan?
Yeah.
He's insane.
Well, we already kind of knew that, though, because his Real World Austin season, he went crazy on one of the girls at one point, and it was uncomfortable and not fun.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is most of these people are a little crazy. That's why they pick him.
Yeah, but he stood out. I mean, one of his quotes was, once you start to let defeat in, it starts to manifest in your existence.
Mm.
Like, I don't think Kevin Garnett is telling the Celtics that before Game 7.
KG is a bad example after his post-game speech after we won the title last year.
Yeah. I don't know if speech is the right word.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever transpired.
Yeah,
that was.
Well, we actually have a correction from the last Duel podcast that we did.
It's a good point.
We said that what's his face?
Mark Long.
We said he had tearfully retired and then, you know, showed up again on this other challenge without any acknowledgement of his tearful retirement. Actually, we got him confused with Timmy, who was the one who tearfully retired, and it was like one of those.
I had a retirement ceremony, like a tour, like Kareem.
Yeah, or even Dr. J.
Yeah.
But Mark, well, tell the story. What Mark? Mark also did retire, but tell that story.
I don't know all the details that well, Bill, but I know that he did retire during one of the challenges after losing. Did he retire to TJ?
The key part, though, is that he took off his headband, his signature headband.
Yeah, the handing of the headband, of course.
And he handed it, I think, to Derek. It symbolized the passing of the torch, which was the sweaty headband of a reality star. Kind of the same thing. Same ballpark. But now he's back, and there's no acknowledgement of the fact that he said it was his final challenge.
Do you think it was some sort of alleged suspension? Like other famous athletes?
You think it was a 50-game suspension? Yeah, like A-Rod's fake hip surgery?
The Clemens Jordan thing is in play here? I don't know. It might be.
Interesting.
Maybe John Murray made a call.
These guys? Like, well, first of all, they're in this awesome, gigantic house in the middle of nowhere in New Zealand. There's no gym. We haven't seen a gym. Have we seen a weight room?
No. There's a bar.
There's a bar?
Yeah.
There's eating, there's drinking, there's carousing, there's partying. No gym.
No gym.
All these guys are ripped.
Yeah.
These guys just continue to be ripped. I want to know how that happens.
Yeah, they can't be eating healthy.
No.
They're not getting a lot of exercise wearing a bobblehead and driving down a mountain on a tricycle.
Right. There must be a gym. They just don't show it.
There must be a gym, but the workouts just aren't exciting to watch, I guess, or something.
Yeah, but you'd think while they were working out, they'd have conversations like, hey, did you hear what happened with the threesome last night?
Yeah,
stuff
or who
like
are you going to pick? Because if you pick Paula, then Paula's going to pick Dunbar, and then Dunbar's going to pick Rachel. It's so convoluted. Like, I watch this show and pay close attention to it, as you know. I have no idea what the hell's going on during their strategy sessions.
Well, the strategy.
It's like a weird waterfall of names that's just confusing to me.
I got to say strategy is the word strategy should actually sue the show for any use of the word strategy session. It's a complete – it's slander almost.
I would love to serve that subpoena. strategy. Yeah, strategy, the word. No, the word. No, not a guy named strategy, not a rapper, the word.
You have to actually have an IQ over 90 to attempt the strategy.
Totally buy that. Another thing is about their environment is why did they decide to do it at like 45 degrees and cloudy every day?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's cold. It looks really cold there. And if you're gonna go the cold direction, to do it in Upper Canada in the middle of winter.
Let's talk about the episode 4, the key plot, which was Rachel and Jen.
Oh yeah, wrestling.
Rachel is an out-of-the-closet lesbian. Jen,
very much so.
Jen is everything's in play for her. They had a little affair in the last show. This show, it's been a coolness. Something must have happened.
They had a connection on the island.
A connection.
All right.
A connection basically means they hooked up.
Yeah, there was a connection on the island.
It was a connection that was sexual. And they got off the island. Something happened. They don't talk. Come back in the island. It's a little dicey. And then all of a sudden now they're hooking up in a sleeping bag again.
They're wrestling.
It started out with some wrestling, as all bisexual hookups do.
There's some wrestling. And then what really puzzled me is, and again, I'm upset with the producers, and I only critique because I really love the show and I want to see it get better, is how do you not have a camera in that room?
I think they did, but it might have been so steamy they couldn't show anything.
Oh, they've done it, but there's pixelating and nighttime and there's ways around that. Show them walking in the room. How do you not have a camera in there?
It's a great question.
There's been two hookups on the show, and I have not seen one frame of either of them.
You know, if I was the one hooking up on these shows, I wouldn't do the under the sleeping bag thing. I would just go over the sleeping bag.
They don't get that.
I would say, you know what? You can't show this if this is like so obscene that it's unpixelatable. You know what I mean?
I thought I'd be holding up two middle fingers while I did it too.
I thought of this. I was watching the Cheaters episode, another great show, and you know sometimes they'll put the camera in somebody's bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and then you know somebody's wife will bring back the dude's best friend, and they just go at it. But there's this one time where the camera's on the bed. And they, my whole screen was pixelated. Like they couldn't show any part of the screen. It was just a giant, giant pixel frenzy for 15 seconds. And then Joey Greco was showing this to whoever the person was who's being cheated on. And they were like, you know, they just had that Brad Miller, I just got punched in the face by Rajon Rondo look. Just watching this. Like, oh my God. And they cut back to it. And it's just again, a giant pixel and you can't see anything. I think that's the move for if you're hooking up on these shows.
I really hope that they don't listen to this and pick up these tips.
Well, I've said it before. I'll say it again. One of the biggest tragedies in life is that a disgruntled Bunham Murray editor hasn't
put together a tape.
Put this all on one DVD and just insane. Put it online.
I'll take a low resolution.
The X-Men movie can get leaked online, I can see the Jen Rachel hookup online.
Please. Just do humanity a favor and put out that tape. There's hours and hours of it. It could be like, you know, Joe Francis made his millions from like working on Too Hot for TV, and then all of a sudden grabs these clips. And next thing you know, he's got a villa in Mexico with an anything phone. Something tells me this editor could at least get himself like a 2-bedroom condo in Santa Monica off of this.
I would hope.
I would hope too.
I have a very important question. So you're familiar with I forget the name of the book, but there was the chapter about when you name your kid a certain name.
There's implications. Sure.
It increases the odds. Freakonomics, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
It increases the odds that they'll be like a stripper or a porn star or something. You name your kid Jasmine or Crystal, the odds just go up.
Yeah, totally. One of my best friends is from the projects in Brooklyn. His name is Alistair, so he can have more opportunity in life. I thought that was genius.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
I like
G-Lock.
That.
I think you know G-Lock. He's also the DP of... Through the Fire and the Streak and whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
So you have a daughter named Jen. You throw the second N on there. You make it J-E-N-N. I think it increases the odds that this girl is just going to be up to bad things by like 50. I think it's 50 times as likely that she's going to embarrass her father in some form with the second N. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about the second end that pushes it that way, but it is what it is.
I don't even have a response. I just 100% agree.
Put it this way. You're never going to see Senator Jen with two N's Clancy.
No.
Senator or Vice President Jen.
The Times bestseller list. I'd love to do some research right now and find out the Times bestseller list has ever had a Jen with two N's.
And the sad thing is there's probably at least one listener right now listening who has a name Jen with two N's. And she's like, oh, my God. Oh, he's right. I shouldn't have done that last night. And she's having like a whole life epiphany right now.
She's writing the DMV right now trying to get changed.
For instance, our producer, Jacqueline, our temporary producer this week. Jacqueline, classy name.
Great name.
Almost like brings the level of class to the BS report that, frankly, I don't think it needs.
Real good associations with the name Jacqueline.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're not gonna see a Jacqueline on the Real World Road Rules Challenge.
No.
But you'll see a Jen with two N's.
You absolutely will. Yeah. My brother named my niece Eleanor for that reason as well.
Oh, nice.
Eleanor. Good associations.
Yeah, you name your kid after Eleanor Roosevelt, and she's probably not going to be in the real world.
Yeah, yeah. Or the challenge.
But here's what I don't get. Then you get a Diem. Diem is in the real world challenge.
Or the just straight Latin.
Yeah. For some reason, that almost, I don't know. But anyway.
There's exceptions to every rule. One thing is, as we start to wind down here.
Yes.
Is as the show starts to wind down.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm personally insulted by every single episode.
Yeah.
Is when the loser just walks off into the distance.
Where do they go?
Like on the island? They did this on the island.
Yeah.
It's like, where are you going to wade into the ocean and cast yourself out to sea? Like, I know this isn't real. Why don't you just give a hug to the castmates and then cut to the next scene? Cut to next time on.
Well, it's funny because in the last episode, Katie walked off, but then they all chased her down because she didn't want to hug her.
Yeah, but that's because she's so loved.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
she's
really distraught.
Yeah, she's loved because she wrestles and does body shots and hooks up with really everybody in the
show. She wrestles hard, too. Like, when she was wrestling Jen really hard.
Yeah, it was good.
Like, dudes don't do that. If Evan and MJ start wrestling like that, like, someone gets stabbed.
All right, I know you have to go, so let's talk about quickly. Let's give our maybe the power four. Four most likely people to win.
Okay. Can we each pick three as picks for our draft?
Great idea.
Okay.
Great idea. Not as good of an idea as the idea that we...
Whoa,
whoa. No. I'm not going to mention it. I'm just saying we did something on Sunday night that was the greatest idea I think I've ever been involved with, which can never be mentioned.
Yeah.
But this is pretty good. All right, so I'll go first since it's my show.
It's the BS report.
I'm gonna pick Brad first because I think him and Tori, they're engaged.
Did you see the next time on with them?
Yeah, but they always do that, though, and somebody's engaged. They always have the fights.
I'll do anything for you. He's like, you want me to prove my love and my valor? I'll go into the duel for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's romance, man. That's emotion.
I got to say, here's a sentence that's not said a lot in life. So where'd you meet your wife? Funny story. So we're on this reality show called The Duel. Everybody's hooking up. It's just a free-for-all. It's orgies. Drunken orgies. And I looked across the room one night, and there she was.
Yeah, I was just walking around making out with every single girl, and she happened to be last. So
I'm coming down from a steroid cycle.
Yeah, I'm mostly a wreck.
There's a hot tub orgy, and I look, and she's reading a book. And I'm like, wow, classy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go Brad. Who do you go with?
You know, my pick is Evan, and I know he's been controversial, but I just don't think he can get beat in a duel, and I think people are going to start realizing that and stop picking him. I'm going Evan.
Okay. I'll give you Snake Fashion. You can have pick three as well.
All right. I'm going to bring this into female as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Ruthie based on that rope challenge when she was on that thing like a lemur or something.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
Just rocking that thing. That was an amazing athletic feat.
Yeah. But, you know, she's the same person who drank and drive so frequently in Hawaii that the producers actually had to intervene. So I'm going to say that rears its ugly head at some point.
She didn't just drink and drive, Phil. She would get annihilated to the point where she couldn't stand and then get behind the wheel.
Actually, when you think of like all the progress we've made with drunk driving and just people becoming more aware of it and the dangers and all that stuff, like it was only 9 years ago, but it's kind of amazing they would even let her get in a car.
Yeah,
you think you've got cameramen there. You have her wobbling.
Producers, PAs, interns.
You have her literally wobbling to her car and getting in, turning on the key and driving away. And they're like, hey, did we get that? You got that, right? It's like, yeah.
How's the sound?
Oh.
Could you hear her burp as she drove away? Good.
Terrible. Anyway, all right. So for my pick, I'm going to keep going with the Brad theme, and I'm going to say Tori. I think Brad and Tori are in the final two. How many is the final
what? They pick each other every time.
Right.
Yeah, usually, I believe there'll be a male and a female winner as a team.
Well, here's the thing. In the duel, it's like, you know, everybody's out for themselves. Everyone's broke. Everyone will do anything for money. But for some reason, if you're engaged to somebody, it brings you to a level of a higher respectability.
Yeah. Brad will go into the duel.
Yeah.
for Tory. That says a lot.
They need the money, man. They're getting married. That's how they think because they're so stupid. But
you need the money. Get a job.
Yeah. How about this? Make a sex tape. You make more money guaranteed with a sex tape than your slight chance at $100,000.
Go find that editor and convince them to make the sex tape for you.
All right, last thing. Celtics Bulls, what do you think?
I think that the Celtics are going to win by like 23.
Oh, like a repeat of the Atlanta series last year.
Yeah, I like almost to a T. Like I think it's going to be a blowout. And I wrote you an email that the only thing that can make the series better is if Michael Jordan comes out with the Bulls in a suit and Larry Bird comes out with the Celtics in a suit and sit on the end of the bench.
Oh, wait a second. Don't think I didn't rip off that idea and throw it in today's column. Without giving you credit.
No, that's fine. I don't want credit.
No, I just told the Jordan Bird part. I didn't steal the suits part. But I just thought it was good. It needed to be thrown in.
I'm all for it.
I figured you're a team player.
Yeah.
Here's my take. I think the Celtics trail by between 6 and 10 for the entire game until the last 5 minutes. They rally back one more time. It comes down to the final minute, and they win by like 2 or 3. The Bulls will do – they'll do two stupid things because they're young and they don't know any better.
You think Ben Gordon will miss a 10-foot fadeaway from the baseline?
Something stupid. Like they'll just screw up a play or they'll screw up a rotation because – really, they have a better team. And I said this after game two. They have a slightly better team, slightly more talent. But unless you've been there, there are little things that you just don't know. And like you look at like game five when the Bulls were up by 10 in the last like 4 minutes or whatever. And you remember when Rose sailed the alley-oop pass over Noah's head? Like you can't throw that pass. But
it's
he doesn't
hard
know
to
that
sail
yet.
It over. Yeah.
He doesn't know that. He's 20. He's playing. There's a level of composure.
Do you think they've got – one thing I'm thinking is they might have the, like, too young to know any better advantage.
That's fine, and it can carry you to a Game 7.
Yeah.
But it doesn't win you a Game 7. And there's – history is littered with this type of situation where you have the young team, you know, on their way up. You get to the Game 7. I think a decent example is the 93 Suns versus the 93 Sonics, the really young Sonics team. 93 Suns team that had been there and had a lot of guys who had, you know, been in some big games, and it just kind of the experience wins out. Although in that case, they got a million calls too, but, yeah. I just think experience wins out. I'd be amazed if the Bulls just went in and kicked ass. I really would.
I've got one quick question for you. Larry Bird goes on Dan Patrick's radio show. I believe it was Dan Patrick's radio show.
Yeah.
And he details how he would stop Paul Pierce to the media. You're a Larry Bird fan. Do you feel that was in any way some sort of a violation of Celtic code?
The legend did that?
Yeah. He said he always goes right, and he likes to spin right. That kind of detailed how he would stop Paul Pierce.
Yeah, but you know, that is how you stop Paul Pierce. I mean, it's... Derrick Rose is the same thing. When has Derrick Rose gone left in this series?
Ben
he might
Jordan.
Spin left, but he'll always end up going right.
That's a good point.
He always goes right. And, you know, God forbid we overplayed him to the left, but please tell me Tony Allen doesn't play in this series. Please. Please, for the love of God, please. Please.
You see his alley-oop highlight? It was like, you kind of wished it into the basket. You know, he didn't exactly catch it and slam it down.
What I don't get is you've scored on 10 straight possessions or 11 or whatever it was. You're up by 5 and you have the ball. Why do you say we got to go defense? We got to get stops.
We got to make.
They can't. They can't score. Or they can't stop you from scoring. You just score every time you win. The game's over.
No. We got to make a change.
I hope so. I just thought, you know, Doc has his pluses and his minuses. I think he's gotten a lot better over the last 5 years. But the Tony Allen sub was unforgivable. It really was. You should not be reacting to what the other team does. That's what Avery Johnson did in 2007. That's why he lost to Golden State. You can't change what you do because somebody was stupid enough to play John Salomon's a power forward. Like, he's doing that hoping that you will be dumb enough to put Tony Allen in. He's basically saying, here, I'm going to throw this. I'm going to take my fishbowl. I'm going to throw my hook in the water, and I'm going to try to reel Doc Rivers in, and he did. And that's what bugs me.
Yeah. Totally. So Jacqueline, what do you think is going to happen in Game 7?
She's too into Marta.
Well, I'll root for the Celtics. I'm not a huge basketball fan, but I did enjoy last night's game.
Why don't you root for the Celtics since it's such a great day for Boston sports with with the two greatest women soccer players ever in the same field, followed by a game seven?
That's what I said. I was going to root for the Celtics. I just hope that I don't hit traffic on the way home. That's all.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Jacoby. We'll talk to you soon, and good luck on Sports Nation that you're starting.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Talk to you soon. All right, one last thing. We wanted to talk to Cousin Sal today to preview the Pacquiao-Hatton fight, which is Saturday night, and unfortunately, it's kind of going head-to-head against the Celtic game, although maybe it'll come on after the Celtic game. I'm not sure. Going to be a great fight. Both Sal and I like the Pac-Man. I would fully recommend a Pac-Man-Celtics moneyline tease. Cash that one in. I'm not calling it a lock, but I think it's a good bet. But we'll have Sal on next week, hopefully, to talk about the fight and a whole bunch of other stuff. Enjoy the weekend. Really one of the great sports weekends that I can remember in a long time. Until next week on the BS Report.
Target the sun off. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
The $5 foot-long anthem rolls on with Subway Everyday Value. So many of your Subway favorites are $5 foot-longs, like that Tastetacular Spicy Italian $5 foot-long and the piled ridiculously high BLT $5 foot-long, both made to your order on the freshly baked bread of your choice.